Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Defender of Caregivers podcast. Today, our topic is damned if you do and damned if you don't. This is a heavy topic. We're recording this the morning of Hurricane Irma as she's batting down on Key West. And on a selfish note, I have a son in Jacksonville, which is way north, but I'm still nonetheless worried, and like many of us all, watching this storm coming, feeling quite helpless because there's nothing we can do for those folks. But I hope that I can share with you a unique perspective from both the professional and the personal side of such a thing as a storm like this. My name is Lon Kiefer, your host, and I am a caregiver. In fact, I'm known as Doc, the Defender of Caregivers, and my expertise is understanding the caregiver personality and advocating for pro-per relationships between professional and personal family caregivers, absent the caregiving flag of fear, loathing, anger, and guilt. Today's You Might Be a Caregiver If statement, drumroll please, is you might be a caregiver if you realize you're damned if you do and damned if you don't, and sometimes, damn it, you just want someone to tell you what to do. But then again, you don't, because no one knows your situation the way you know your situation, and everybody's situation is unique, and there's no easy answers in this. You know, I talk about and have coined the term and trademarked the term, the caregiver's dilemma. There is no correct answer. There's only the next best indicated choice, and then living with the outcomes, as I've said many times on this podcast. But this is really a tough one. You know, as Irma is approaching, I'm not going to give us a specific cognitive caregiver distortion for today's podcast because, you know, the whole idea behind distorted thinking is that when we are stressed, we don't think clearly, and how can we be more stressed than in a moment like this? But one of them is personalizations, where you see yourself as the, you know, as being central to something when you're really not. I mean, this storm is not about me, but damn it, it feels really personal, even though I'm sitting here in Delaware, and, you know, I'm probably going to get impacted from it from a standpoint of rain and maybe, you know, a little bit of coastal flooding. I'm near the coast several days after the main event is over. So this is not about me, but it just feels so personal. I've been in the I've been a nurse for almost 35 years, and I've been a nursing home administrator for over 25. Obviously, I don't serve as a nursing home administrator now, but I work and consult with people in the industry, and presently, I have clients that have evacuated 12 different senior living communities in Florida, and based on all the indications, these were people on the eastern side of Florida, you know, Miami and that, and as of midnight, I've lost track of this the other night, the storm has shifted to the west, so now they have to look at, the people that we moved to the west of Florida, you know, perhaps, I'm just hypothetically speaking, do we now move them back to the east? So we maybe emptied one of our sister facilities and communities, I hate the word facility, and moved them to the west. So now, as of midnight the other night, we have to move them back to the east. And I'm going to tell you, folks, this is a damned if you do and damned if you don't scenario. I've been through many storm preparations, nothing even remotely approaching Irma. You know, I've been through blizzards where my generator failed and ran out of diesel after two or three days and there was no electric. And, you know, right across the street, the hospital had electric, but we didn't because we weren't considered a priority. I mean, we're a 140-bed nursing home and we're not considered a priority on the electrical grid. Believe me, I got some senators and some politicians involved, and we got that changed. But, you know, I faced a lot of these challenges, you know, boarding up buildings and trying to get the food. So, I mean, I can't tell you how seriously the industry takes this, and yet it is still a damned if you do, damned if you don't equation. Again, I never faced anything like Irma, but I faced enough to know what these folks are going through. And they're calling families, I'm sure, and telling families the known risk, and please inviting the family to come take your loved one and take care of them yourselves. And some of the families are saying, no, this is your responsibility. That's why we're working with you. Other families are saying, oh, thank you for that indication, invitation to do that. Our instincts were telling us that was the right thing, and we just didn't know. You know, they want that invitation to step in and take action. And it, there's just no right or no wrong answer here. What there is the best of intentions. You look at the circumstances, you make your best decision possible, and you live with the outcome without regret, remorse, or guilt. And yeah, that's easy to say, right? Monday morning quarterbacks are always a perfect vision. I'm going to be kind of scattered in this podcast, and I apologize for this, but this is a very emotional issue for me because I see both sides of it, and there shouldn't be two sides. It should be one side. You know, what are we going to do? How are we going to survive this? One of the things that I wrote in my latest book, the 8 Qualities of Caring Cultures, is that when something goes wrong, instead of asking somebody, why did you do that? Because that puts people on the defensive. Instead, we should ask how and what. You know, how can we have avoided this, and what can we do the next time around? We just don't know. Sometimes things are beyond our control, and I hate the saying it is what it is, because it seems to just throw all care and concern out the window, and you know, we can't behave that way. But truly, when it comes to something this enormous, it is what it is. And we don't have to be, you know, fatalistic or pending doom kind of thinking. I've seen some fantastic things come out of these type of things as far as team building, and it really makes you cohesive and stronger for the next one. But the key is, you got to survive this one. And I'm going to try and give you some facts here, because this whole should I stay or should I go thing is not an emotional decision. It's an actual factual scenario. I heard a gentleman at a conference I was speaking at doing rah-rah stuff. There was a guy by the name of Jody DePriest that was doing disaster preparedness, and this gentleman was a regional of a nursing home company that operated in New Orleans, and he tells the story of Katrina and how they evacuated, I think, 5 nursing homes, and I think one of them multiple times. And you all remember the major class action lawsuit that class action is a legal term, and I shouldn't have used it because I don't know that it was class action, but the major lawsuit of the nursing home in New Orleans that did not evacuate, and they had drownings, and we saw some terrible pictures. We just saw the same thing play out again at Houston, and you know, people in social media were saying, shame on those folks, they were warned. Man, it is such a difficult decision. And here's the facts, folks. As a result of Katrina, there was another storm that came in the ensuing years after, I think 3 years after, and it was Gustav, and it was supposed to hit Katrina, the same area that hit Katrina, and it was supposed to be, you know, just as big, if not worse, than Katrina. So 119 different nursing communities evacuated the area prior to Hurricane Gustav. And as storms will do, they're a fickle bitch, excuse my language, but we just don't know how they're going to behave. Just like Irma shifting to the west at midnight and putting a whole different region of Florida in peril, perhaps the region where people evacuated to, they now have to evacuate from. And I'm going to talk a little bit about a Facebook post on the whole idea of evacuating as an individual. So as an individual, so think about it as a large community, 100 or more frail elderly and potentially dementia folks. When you're in a nursing home, roughly 70% of the folks in a nursing home, 50 to 70% carry a diagnosis of Alzheimer's or some related dementia. And these folks just don't travel well. They don't handle changes well. They don't handle emergency help personnel that is in there to help that cannot be predictive and intuitive in seeing a change in someone with dementia, excuse me, whereas their regular caregivers would see it and predict it. And here's the facts, folks. I'm getting wound up. Let me slow down. They did a study of morbidity and mortality, the death rates of those folks from the 119 nursing communities for Hurricane Gustav. It was about 22,000 folks, and over the next 30 to 90 days, the morbidity, the death toll, rose significantly for those folks that were evacuated. And then you go back and you compare that to the potential deaths of sheltering in place, which is the term where you prepare and you don't evacuate and you stay with your known staff. And the death toll was higher in the cases where evacuation occurred than in the cases where it was shelter in place. Now imagine that. You just can't win that scenario, because if someone drowns or dies because they lose the electricity to a life-saving apparatus in the immediate term, you can point a finger to the enemy. The enemy is the storm, or the enemy is the administrator, or the enemy is the owner of the communities that did not evacuate. So you have a bad guy. You can identify them easily. You can target them. You can bring a lawsuit against them. But if the bad guy is, you know, Father Time or aging or whatever you want to call natural causes when the person passes away over the next 30 to 60 to 90 days after the event, you don't have the smoking gun, you know, the person that you can point to and say, this is your fault, because you no longer have that emotional cause and effect. But you have a statistical and perhaps a factual cause and effect, a predictive cause and effect. But it is a very different phenomenon. So now the decision might be getting made from a litigious standpoint. And that's not how I want the decision to be made for my loved one or for the staff that I'm leading or for the company that I'm representing. So I just want you to know this is a phenomenally difficult decision. It is an inherently flawed decision because there is no immediate right or wrong. I mean, yes, if you are 100% certain, or even say 80% certain, that you're going to be in the eye of the storm, or if you have a building that suffers flooding from heavy raining, and you know this is coming, then that skews the decision a little bit, makes it a little bit easier to pick a winner as far as what direction to take. But here's the reality. In the end, it is your decision. You know, sometimes because I've got a goofy mind and although I've never been a music buff in that I've never been able to play an instrument successfully, although Lord knows I tried, and I'm not one to remember, you know, who a band is, or I mean, how I love the Rolling Stones and you know, the Eagles and, you know, all those folks that I grew up with, but I didn't know who sang what song. I just liked the songs. And I'm reminded of a song, Should I Stay or Should I Go Now? If I go, there will be trouble. If I stay, it will be double. So come on and let me know, should I stay or should I go? My apologies for my singing. That was The Clash, a punk rock band in 1982. And no, I didn't remember that. I Googled it. I looked it up. There's a lot of prep going into this. But the point is, I mean, and that song was about, you know, being in a bad relationship, but, you know, I'm just reminded of the lyrics, you know, if I go, there will be trouble. If I stay, it will be double. We just don't know, so come on and let me know. We'd love somebody else to make the decision. Frankly, in this world that we live in, people like the governor, I won't name a governor because we got, you know, Texas 2 weeks ago in Florida now, but the governor standing up and mandating an evacuation is actually a good thing for the industry because it relieves them of the burden of making the decision, but not always. And I don't want to turn this into a legal parsing of what is going on because frankly I'm not an expert in that. What I'm an expert in, though, is the proper professional and personal relationships. And I got to tell you something, a piece that a lot of times we miss is that the folks that are working in these communities serving our family members and loved ones, they have their own family members and loved ones. And one of the ways that I say it is you might be a caregiver if you sometimes have to choose between caring for the ones you love and caring for the ones you love and the ones you love caring for. Messed up my own saying. You might be a caregiver if you sometimes have to choose between caring for the ones you love and or the ones you love caring for. I mean, it's a hell of a choice. You know, what do I do? Do I stay home and take care of my family, or go into work and take care of the folks that are living in the community that I work for? Now, mind you, a lot of these folks are you know, making just above minimum wage. I mean, this is not a, you know, they don't have some of the resources. And I myself, you know, whenever the storms that I was prepping for, I mean, I had a lot more resources, I imagine, than some of my frontline workers did. But I was a single father for so much of the time that I was a nursing home administrator. And frankly, that pro-per balance, the professional and personal caregiver balance that I had going on in my life, is what made me a better administrator, because the fact that I was a single father made me stay put and evolve as a leader from being a top-down, my way or the highway, tough guy, you know, corporate leader, to being a more empathic, emotional, caring leader, nurturing leader, was the fact that, you know, I didn't climb that ladder professionally because I needed an environment where I could include my kids or take care of my kids as well as fulfill my professional responsibilities. And believe it or not, even with all the stresses of running a nursing home, that was it, because it was, you know, it's an extended family, so to speak, and I included my children in my day-to-day operations. I mean, on Christmas morning, my kids used to get out after opening up their gifts and everything. They'd put on whatever, you know, when they were younger, they'd get some kind of a, you know, Christmas outfit kind of thing, or maybe a Maryland Terrapins red jacket, because we were big Maryland basketball fans, and red was a Christmas color. So, like, every year I'd give them, you know, maybe Maryland sweatpants or a jacket, and they'd put those on and put on a Santa's hat, and then we'd go in and hand out candy canes to all the staff that was working, or chocolate chip cookies or sugar cookies that we had made several days before. So I always included my children in my professional responsibilities. And when it would come to storms, you know, they would say, "So, Dad, are we going with you, or are you taking us to, you know, Aunt Jenna and Aunt Megan?" Because a couple days before a storm, if I was really convinced it was going to be a bad one, I'd have to leave. I'd drive 100 miles north, go over the Bay Bridge onto what they call the Western Shore, and I'd leave my children with my family. And then I'd go back and hunker down and move into my nursing community for a couple of days and drive nurses around in the blizzard at night. And you know, so I was blessed, even as a single father. I had enough resources. I had enough money to pay for gas. I had a family that could, you know, help me, that was far enough away that they were out of the eye of the storm, so to speak, but also close enough that I could get to them. And I remember them meeting me halfway and you know, meeting at a Dunkin' Donuts and handing them off, so to speak, and then, you know, them going off and having a fun time. And it's even one of the, you know, great memories of my kids as a growing up, because while they were there, I think it was my son or somebody that they dialed 911 just to see what would happen, and then they hung up and the police showed up at the door and said, "Did someone here call 911?" And they were all so scared that they were going to get in trouble. And, you know, I mean, I'm on a tangent here, but the point of it is that this is a pro per, a storm like this cannot be a better example of pro per caregiving. The team, the allegiance, the alliance that has to occur between professional caregivers and personal family caregivers. These folks that are working there, that a family might look at them and say, "This is your job." Hey, they got family too. They're making a hell of a sacrifice to just be there. I remember vividly, you know, as cell phones became a big deal in the industry, there became the issue that these families were, I mean, the frontline staff were, you know, on their cell phones, and the immediate this, you know, conclusion that was drawn was that this was inappropriate and that they were using their cell phones for personal business and that they were being distracted from work. But I'm going to tell you, in every other industry in the world, having a cell phone in your hand is almost expected. It becomes a tool that is utilized by the employer. But in our industry, in the senior living industry, in the caring industry, it's some great taboo. And this is, you know, and I know companies that just had a 100% ban of cell phone use, and I know others that used it other ways, and they would go at it with disciplinary tactics. And I tried to take a respectful approach. I tried to say to my people, "Look, I would rather risk having you be on the cell phone for a second to check on your kids or do what have you than to have you disappear into a bathroom or a residence bathroom or a I literally knew of incidences where they would go into a resident's closet so that they could use their cell phone and not get caught. I mean, this stuff is, we get so twisted in our thinking and what have you, but I remember vividly that during 911, which is, oh my gosh, that's tomorrow. This is September 10th. The morning is September 10th. I remember when 911 occurred so many years ago now, I was in stand-up morning meeting with my leadership team at Seaford Center, and oh my God, what powerful memories. And when I went around and I told the staff, I said, feel free to use your cell phones to check on your family and if you need to go get your family, because they were closing the schools. You know, they didn't know what would come next. You know, we set up a tap out where, you know, this wave went to get their kids, and they brought them back to the nursing community. They brought them back to their extended family, their pro per family. And then we let the next wave go through and get their kids. And I mean, it was such a bonding thing for us, and I feel like a heel to talk about, you know, how that tragedy for the lives that were directly impacted in the country and what it unleashed politically, that it was a bonding event, but it clearly was. But these are very trying times, and there's no easy yes or no. Now, to those of you that have a very strong opinion, I even respect and will defend you for that. It's an emotional time, and what conclusion you draw, hey, it's how you get through this in the moment. But there is a morning after. There is a retrospect, and I just pray that everyone on both sides of this equation, when they wake up the morning after, they will look at this in less of a critical term and more of a how can we heal from this and go forward, because there is no right or wrong decision. Hear me now. The statistics bear it out. You evacuate a nursing home or a senior living environment where there is a significant amount of dementia involved, mortality will go up as a result of that evacuation. Of course, if you don't evacuate and somebody dies in the storm, you have that burden going forward. So there is no direct, easy answer. And when we're dealing with Mother Nature here, I don't know, it sounds like tongue-in-cheek, and I wish I could say these things for a minute out loud before I say them live. You know, I would hope that afterwards we're Mother Nurture, and we just reach out to each other, and we, you know, we have to analyze and learn, but we should analyze, like, what, you know, what can we do next? How can we do better? Not why didn't you do this, or why didn't you do that, or why did you do this? Because the question is valid on both ends. Why didn't you and why did you are valid questions from a standpoint of tying the decision, the yes or no, should I stay or go decision, to an outcome. But information is never perfect. And, you know, this is a heck of a mess. Now, again, on a personal note, I know people in Florida. Gary Joseph LeBlanc, who's been on this podcast and he's kind of the personal side of everything that I do on the professional side of my caregiver's journey here. We talk all the time, and we often have different perspectives on the same issue. He touches a lot more communities than I do, because the way he spreads his message is he goes to a lot of communities and he does his dementia training. And I do as well, but I do fewer events because it's a different type of event. And I work with clients behind the scene with helping them, you know, communicate with their, I'm losing energy describing what I do with them because it sometimes feels, anyway, here's what I'm trying to get to. Gary and I were talking this morning via text, and we each have clients that we work with that have evacuated buildings. I mean, like a lot of them. I think in my portfolio, there's between 8 and 12, and 5 buildings right now are trying to make the decision because of the shift in the storm. Gary has more because he lives in Florida and he travels around and talks to people on a daily basis, and this is just not an easy decision. Gary himself, he's posting this on Facebook, so I'm not digging too much into his world. But, you know, he has sisters that that need his help and support, and you know, he had to shelter in place. He moved his sisters into his house, so they've got 3 adults and I think 4 pets. And let's talk about pets for a minute, because you know, that's a caregiver phenomenon as well. I know you guys have heard me talk about Chance the rescue dog, and you've seen pictures of him on Facebook. I cannot tell you how that dog has changed my life. I think differently. If I have a speaking engagement that I have to go to and I'm going to be away, sometimes I consider whether I really want to do it, because I've gotten that kind of a bond with him. And you know, if I consider taking on an interim role where I'm going to help a community through a transitional period where I'm going to have to be in there every day for a couple of weeks and I might be away from him, it's a tough decision. So let's make the decision if we're going to evacuate our homes. Well, what if we have a pet? Okay, well, we're going to take the pet with us, of course. Well, are we going to go to a shelter? No, you're not, because if you don't have your vaccination records up to date and in your hand, they're not going to let you in that shelter. So, you know, okay, so I'm not the most organized guy. I have no idea. Well, with Chance, because he's kind of new and he's you know, working towards being a certified therapy dog, I'm keeping good records, so I have them. But I've always had dogs. I've never had good records, so I could never have gotten in a shelter with my animals. So what does that mean? I stay in place. Is that a good decision, or is that an emotional decision? You tell me, should I stay or should I go now? It's a tough call. There's a woman by the name of Jennifer Mertens Wilkes, who is a friend of mine on Facebook, and I met Jennifer some time ago at, I think it was the POMA conference in Baltimore, and that POMA was some way that stands for Physician Office Management Association or whatever, but it was professional association that brought together leaders in the physician management practice world. So these are folks that would run the practices of a doctor or a group of doctors. So they were really kind of in the, you know, if you got a seesaw between professional and personal, and I think they call it a fulcrum, where the you know, each side of the equation shifts to the other over the fulcrum. A physician's office is the fulcrum. They are the sort of gatekeeper between professional and personal family caregivers. So these folks have amazing insight of what happens with people that come up there, come in and perhaps are considering working with the professional side of the caregiving equation and taking care of their loved ones. And she posted something, it was a attention, and I'm just now realizing this is, she's sharing a friend's post, and she doesn't attribute which friend, but I thought this was her that wrote it. But either way, she has a list of eight rules when discussing the hurricane with Floridians. And it's attention, dear non-Floridians. And rule number one, calling people who don't evacuate idiots or saying they deserve what happens to them is a judgment statement that without facts you are not qualified to make. And she goes in to talk about, you know, it's not a state of spring breakers. It's really a state of an unbelievable amount of 55-plus communities. And, you know, where are you going to go? The elderly can't drive, and they might not have the finances. And I personally know of people that started the journey and then ran out of gas. My son in Jacksonville decided not to evacuate. Now, admittedly, he's in Jacksonville, and he should have a lessened storm. But one of the tracks put the eye directly over Jacksonville, where he would get both the front, the back end, and the center of the storm. And I believe that shifted now to the west, and he's a little bit safer, but you know, he went through the same, should I stay or should I go now, and his choice was to stay. And I'm sitting here, I've got the DocMobile, the Defender of Caregivers mobile unit, the RV, and I've got this lifestyle that allows me to basically make my living anywhere I am, and I, you know, I couldn't go help my son, and I literally was tearful yesterday, because I had a nice, peaceful day at the beach, and then on the way back, I'm listening to the radio about the storm, and I was texting some of my clients and colleagues that are evacuating buildings, and I just felt so helpless that I couldn't do anything. And you guys have heard me talk about, you know, my girlfriend Vicky. She noticed that I was, you know, just very silent. She said, "What are you doing? Are you okay?" And I just kind of burst into tears, and I'm like, you know, people are evacuating these buildings, and I'm doing nothing. And I mean, I literally started to borrow my neighbor's trailer because it's more roadworthy than mine, and it has higher walls on it, and I wanted to, you know, hitch it up to the Defender of Caregivers Mobile and set up a daisy chain where I would go to assisted living community after assisted living community, clients and customers of mine, as I drove southward towards Florida, and I was going to load up with water and blankets and tuna fish and peanut butter or what have you. And I still may do that several days from now, but the bottom line is, it's a foolish decision. My neighbor, who has recently retired, was some kind of a... he was in charge of the 911 dispatch and training here in the Delmarva Peninsula, and because we're very vulnerable to storms and tornadoes, he had, you know, a 30-year career where he was on planning and steering committees that talked about this, and he and I sat down and ate some crabs last night, and they were asking me about my son, and I said, I'm not worried about my son. He's young and strong and has taken his every measure he can, and he's not in the eye of the storm, but all these other people that I know that are going through this, and I just want to go down there and help them. And he said, Lon, you got to stay away. He goes, you're not going to be of any help. You're going to get down there with your little contribution of water, and you're going to become a problem that they're going to have to rescue. And think about it, you're going to be driving a 22-foot-long RV that is prone to heavy winds, and you're going to be pulling a trailer, which makes you less maneuverable. And what are you going to do? The first stop you get to, they're gonna take every bit of supplies you have, and then you're gonna be down there in harm's way. You're not helping anybody. What you need to do is you need to take a little bit of time, and you need to figure out how best you can help financially, and you need to send resources to the people that have boots are already going to be on the ground and people that are already there. And I did a little bit more research, and I found out I can't even get into Florida right now. So again, I'm sounding, this is personalization, I'm making it about me, but I'm not wanting to make this about me. I'm trying to make this about the people out there that feel helpless and hopeless to do anything for everybody. I see it every day, every minute or hour on Facebook. I'm worried about my friend here, and I can't do anything about them. If someone in our neighborhood that flew down to Tampa because they're getting ready to have a granddaughter who's due tomorrow, September 11th, and they got down there, I think, on Thursday, and they just evacuated with the shift of the storm. They left at about 11 p.m. last night and said they were heading to somewhere, I think, South Carolina. And I don't think they're entirely out of harm's way when they get there. But, you know, I couldn't sleep last night, and I saw this post. I'm like, oh, man, I you know, are they going to be stuck on the side of the road? They had two dogs, six people, and two or three dogs and two cars is what I meant to say. They're caravanning. You know, are they going to get gas? Because I keep, you know, and then at 7 a.m. I saw a post that they had arrived. My neighbor is a doctor, so he and his wife are there, and so, I mean, he could even deliver the baby if he had to. He's got that skill set. So, you know, it's like they'll be okay, but at the same time, it's a tough decision. Should I stay or should I go now? And what I've been seeing lately, and I love it, is that a couple of these companies that have, I imagine they're all doing it, but I've just looked at a couple of that I work with, where on their websites they're offering 800 numbers for hurricane updates and information, and they're offering opportunities to donate money to the employee funds because they know their employees are going to need help after this, and they're going to need places to stay, they're going to need money to take care of their families that they're not home to take care of. And I heeded the warning of my neighbor, and I decided, instead of spending money, time, energy, and resources to drive down there right away, I'd spend the same amount of money by making a donation. And I'm not asking anybody to do that or telling them what to do. I'm just pointing out that it is very heartwarming to see that these kind of funds are propping up, because Katrina was definitely an eye-opening moment for the industry, and it's just wonderful to see that this kind of evolutionary progress is going on, where we're seeing the pro-per side of things. And it's been a very focusing, enlightening thing for me. I've got some fantastic ideas in my head of how I can change some of the things that I'm doing to be in a better position to help an industry from afar, because from a physical standpoint, you know, I mean, if any one of us was trying to rush to Florida now to help somebody, we would actually be taking up a spot on the road that should be filled by all of the, you know, the electrical company vehicles that are the power companies that are trying to send people in, or FEMA or whoever. We'd just be in the way. Anyway, enough about that. This 8 rules when discussing the hurricane with Floridians. One is calling people to evacuate. I read that. Other one, just get a plane ticket. I'm not going to name names, but there are companies that really failed in the face of this. They jacked up the prices of plane tickets and of water. And there are other companies that increased the number of flights getting out of there at as cheap a price as they could offer it. I think JetBlue was known for doing that. I will definitely come back and talk about the heroes afterward. And I will not be critical of anyone afterward. But I will do a morning after post-storm kind of podcast to share what I've learned in the process. But just get on a plane ticket. You know, where do you go? I mean, how do you have the resources when you land? Don't say get in your car and drive fast out. Gas stations are getting fuel still, but that fuel is gone before the lines are empty. There are ways that we really need to improve. You know, there's a app for Gas Buddy, but Gas Buddy is it's a rumor mill. It's a word tree. It's a, hey, they got gas here, and you tell that person, and you tell that person. Well, by the time it gets to the fifth person who needs gas, they no longer have gas here. So do they send out the word tree that, no, there's no gas there? So you spend the time and the effort to go get that gas. There is a better way, and with technology, we really can do a better job of that, and I think that's something that'll happen as a result of it. You know, anyway, I don't know. I think I've about made the point that I wanted to make here. I just, you know, I wish everyone well. I more than anything, I hope we're easy on ourselves after the fact and not too critical of should I stay or should I go now and the decision that was made. It's just an impossible decision, and statistics bear out that evacuation actually causes death and mortality to increase above and beyond sheltering in place, unless you are within certainty in the eye of the storm. And I mean with certainty. It's such a tough call. So let's please not judge others in the aftermath of this. Let's understand that this is a pro-per world, a professional, personal world that we live in, and that we just have to reach out and put our arms around each other and make the best decisions that we can. And I don't know, I guess that's about it. If you want to know the study that I'm quoting, the title is The Effects of Evacuation on Nursing Home Residents with Dementia. I'll be glad to give you the link. It's kind of a statistical, a heavy statistical read, but the industry is learning every day. We learn from these storms, and we're doing a better job, and we just have to talk more and continue to communicate. It's the pro-per thing to do. We did not do this podcast. Joe Bordow, let me do that a shout out for a minute to Joe Bordow with Radio St. Pete, my mentor, and he's just a godsend to me in sharing this message. The listening audience for the Defender of Caregivers podcast is growing. We still have some structure to do in the past for people to even know that this podcast is out there, but let me give you a moment and a shout out to Joe Bordow, Radio St. Pete. Joe lives in the greater Tampa, St. Petersburg area, And he volunteered to do a little bit of work in helping me on the back end of my podcast, because he said that his storm prep was done. It looks like the East is going to get hit, and that, you know, he thinks he's going to be okay. He put Radio St. Pete on autopilot, told me to take a week off from doing the podcast because they were going to be doing, you know, press releases live and storm announcements and that sort of thing. And then guess what? As he's done prepping, about midnight last night, it shifts to the west. So now where's it going? It's going to Tampa and St. Pete, right where Joe Bordow is. So my thoughts and prayers are with you, Joe. I thank you so much for everything you've done over the last couple of years since we met having dinner in Richmond when you were there caring for your parents, and I thank you for the insights that you've shared and the support that you've given to the Defender of Caregivers podcast and me personally. I'm thinking about you and your loved ones in a strong way, and you know, God bless you, but let's wrap this up with the closing marks, the caregiver's vow. So if you're ready, go ahead and repeat after me. I'm proud of who and what I am. I am a caregiver. I live in awareness that I take satisfaction in pleasing others and sometimes overcommit. I accept that some things I cannot change and I am not perfect. I will allow others to help and join me on my caregiver's journey. I will honor myself as I care for others. This is my solemn caregiver's vow. All right, everybody, that's it for the podcast today. I'm not going to say anything self-serving. You know what to do if you want to share this with people. Please, in everything you do, think also of you and honor yourself as you care for others. Love y'all. See you next time. Bye-bye. Most of all, thank you for caring. Be safe out there, folks. Bye-bye.